Visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. By the way, just telling you what's coming up after 3:30 today. Met a very interesting young guy this morning. He's only 30. His name is John. Mm-hmm. And he has what are, I suppose, generally referred to as moobs, man boobs. And he's had a breast reduction. And apparently quite a lot of people out there, 1 in 3 men, have man boobs, but something can be done about it. So stay tuned for that. It is very interesting indeed, because he was bullied, he was teased, he was driven demented when he was in school because of them, and he needed to do something about it. And eventually he got the courage and the few quid together to do something about it. Anyway, we'll be listening to him at 3:30 or thereabouts. You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. And when you are there, I want you to take a look at 3 well-known bare-chested males. We've got Simon Cowell, we've got John Travolta, we've got Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I have to tell you, when you look at their upper bodies, they're not exactly ideal specimens of the male body today. All 3 showing signs of their age, with prominent beer bellies, sagging skin and what are called man boobs. I don't know if any of the aforementioned ever considered having cosmetic surgery done on their chests, but apparently male breast reduction is on the increase, even here in Ireland. It's a very delicate subject, needless to say. In a moment, we'll be hearing from Dr. Peter Prendergast, president of the European College of Aesthetic Medicine and co-founder of Venus Medical Beauty Clinic in Dundrum. Dr. Prendergast performs what's technically referred to as vaser lipoplasty, or ultrasound-assisted lipoplasty. But when I visited his clinic this morning, I spoke first to John, not his real name. He wants to remain anonymous. He's a 30-year-old IT engineer who had the procedure done last October. I began by asking him why he felt he needed breast reduction.
I was quite a big child, and kind of at the age of about kind of young teenager, I started playing rugby at quite a high level, Leinster Schools. So I lost quite a considerable amount of weight throughout that period of about 2 or 3 years, and kind of that left me with kind of male breasts at that point.
Now, when you say a big child, can you give me an idea how heavy you were and how old you were?
I would say I was about 12 or 13, and I would say I was about 13 or 14 stone.
Oh, that's quite heavy for a 13-year-old.
So I'm actually still that weight now at this stage, so I've been able to manage it.
Okay.
So yeah, just with the rugby and kind of losing an awful lot of weight, while every other part of me was tending to lose weight, my chest wasn't. Mm-hmm. No matter what I did, realistically, from a gym exercise kind of perspective.
Did you do a lot of bench pressing?
Yeah.
To try and turn it into muscle?
Bench pressing, rowing, cycling for high cardio, anything else to kind of to lose extra bits of weight here, there, nothing would shift it. I've actually an underlying thyroid problem as well, which wouldn't have helped. It slows down my metabolism, so it's quite difficult to lose weight anyway in the first place.
So at the age of 13, 14, when you were looking in the mirror and all this other weight had fallen off you and you were left with these, dare I say, man boobs.
Yeah.
And you're looking in the mirror when you get up in the morning, and how did you feel? Obviously, you were very conscious of
it. Yeah, I was very conscious of it. Again, from playing rugby and from being as an active child at that age, you're in a changing room most weekends, if not during the week, if you're playing school sports. And you've got all the other guys around you, again, mostly rugby players. So therefore, they're all kind of well built, kind of starting off on that path. Not only kind of personally looking at myself did I notice it, but again, there was obviously at that age, you get comments and you get kind of jokes and you get whatever thrown at you from people that you go to school with and everything.
They were teasing you.
Yeah.
So what kind of things were they saying?
Looking, laughing, pointing more so than anything, and derogatory terms towards me, and that I more looked like a woman than I did a young guy. That was kind of really, for me, the start of kind of where I knew that there was not something wrong, but just something that I was going to have to deal with or try to deal with somehow, one way or another.
And did it take over your life? Did you find yourself looking at other guys when you were in the changing room, or when you were walking down the street, or when you were on the beach, seeing how different am I really? Was that a constant in your mind?
It does have a knock-on effect in that way. Not only kind of are you looking at yourself, but you become very self-conscious about, I remember going to the beach and not taking off my top on a sunny day, conscious of the clothes that I wear, because I couldn't wear something that was very tight on my chest because it was very obvious. I'd have to wear something that was an awful lot baggier. You're 15, 16 years old. You're starting to look at girls as well. And your ability to approach somebody of the opposite sex kind of starts to kind of, you're unsure of yourself. So with regards to, yes, I was looking at other guys and I was wondering, right, how did they get bodies like that? Why can't I get that? I'm working my butt off here to try and get this. And these people are kind of either not exercising and they're somehow lucky enough that they get that way, or they're exercising but not as hard as me, and they have what I would see in my head, or what I was picturing in my head as a preferred body or a preferred aesthetic look.
Anything but this sort of thing is what you wanted. But I want to go back to when you said you were a big child. Were you overeating? Were you obese, or was it caused by the fact that you were overeating, eating all the wrong stuff, or was it genetic? Do you know?
My family are like my father and my brothers were all kind of broad, big, well built guys. So I would have said that part of it is genetics. There would have probably been other parts of it that would have been kind of not eating the right food, not looking after myself, and possibly not even exercising to the extent of the age group that I should have been. At my age, I probably should have been exercising more than I was. But from my role with work that I do now, I was kind of very much a nerd and kind of ended up towards the computer an awful lot of the time.
Can I ask, what do you do now?
I'm a network engineer.
All right, okay.
But
I'm looking at you now, you don't look like you're carrying any weight at all. You just look perfectly normal.
Well, now, yes. I think kind of if you go step up to today, I think I had this conversation with Dr. Prendergast this morning. No matter how hard I tried in the gym, I couldn't get rid of them.
Okay.
And then after 6 months or 7 months of going to the gym constantly and being able to control the fat and the body weight on your kind of legs and your stomach and your arms, you still couldn't move this, you know, up in your chest. It takes a hit.
Oh, yeah, that's very stressful. Yeah. Did you get depressed?
Yes. Yeah, you take a hit. You decide, right, well, look, I'm putting all this effort in and there's nothing coming from it. I can't get rid of it. All this work that I'm putting in is for nothing because I can't get it off my chest. Now, since the surgery, I've gone back and I've hit the gym quite hard and I'm seeing the results everywhere. Okay. My chest, stomach, everywhere. That was the whole purpose of this anyway, in the first point.
How old are you now?
30.
Okay. So at what point did you in your life did you decide to do something about it? At what point, if that point ever came, did you come out to your parents and say, look, I've got this problem?
My parents were always aware of it. I never discussed it with them, but they were always kind of like, in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, they've said it to me when I was younger, that they noticed it, that when I was with other kids, I wouldn't take off my top, that kind of thing. But it was never discussed at the time when I was young. For whatever reason, I don't know. That was my parents' choice not to have that discussion and my choice not to have that discussion with them. It was always something that I wanted to get done and something that I had in the back of my head that I needed to get somehow sort this out. So I think the turning point was actually being out on a night out at the age of 27 or 28 in Dublin and actually trying to chat somebody up, and the girl actually grabbed my chest and was kind of like, really? You take a horrible hit from that. You're left in a situation of, well, ouch, that hurt. That kind of, is this really holding me back that badly? It's kind of, you think about it in your head, but then when it's physically there and presented to you like that, you kind of go, right, okay, I have to do something about that. It was stuck in my head that I was getting this done. One way or another, I'm getting this done. Now, it took me a kind of a year maybe, or maybe a little bit less, to kind of get up the guts to make contact, to come in, to talk about it and see what could be medically done. But since then, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, but it's certainly worth it.
Okay, well, when I came along today, you're wearing a pair of blue denims and you're wearing a white T-shirt.
Yeah.
And I kept eye contact with you.
Yeah.
bit like guys when they meet girls. They do their best to keep eye contact. They don't want to look down, yeah. right? And I was very conscious that I didn't look at you because yeah. I didn't want to make you conscious of it. Yeah. But I have to say, I'm now looking and I wouldn't know any difference. So we'll talk about the surgery and the procedure you've had yeah. in just a moment. But was intimacy, you're talking about a girl coming up to you in a nightclub and grabbing you and it really psychologically yeah. affecting you. Clearly it did. But was intimacy a problem for you all along? I mean, did you ever find yourself in a situation where, well, you were with someone and your shirt had to come off and you yeah, had to explain yourself or I don't know what?
I've had that response at times, at different times where some have said, no, I don't care. I don't mind about it.
But did you discuss it with them? Did you actually find yourself having to say...
It came to be at a point of where maybe my top would have come off or yeah. anything else, or maybe further into the relationship or anything else like that, I would have maybe discussed, look, do you mind this? Do you mind my chest?
How did you describe it? Did you actually say that?
Yeah. Do you mind me? And some respond perfectly normal of no problem with it at all. But even though their response is that, and it's perfectly normal, in my head I'm thinking they're lying, or I still have this stuck in my head self-consciously that I'm not right. I don't feel right. I've had other moments where it's kind of been taken off my top and it's kind of changed the whole dynamic of what was going on at the time. And the next thing, I don't hear from them, or it's just gone. Whether it was a mix of something else and that, or just the man boobs or anything else like that, in my head, I was thinking, yeah. right.
You were blaming it anyway.
Yeah, I was blaming it anyway.
You're very courageous and honest, and you're speaking out loud about it now, very publicly.
Yeah.
You're not saying this just in one room, surrounded yeah. by three people. Yeah. This is going out of national airwaves. Why?
I'm 30 now. I was kind of 28 when I kind of decided that I needed to get this done. I'm not old or anywhere over the hill, but I went through 10 years, probably a little bit more of kind of this, judging myself and being kind of self-conscious about it. I would like to think that somebody, anyone might hear this and be able to go, okay, there is an alternative option. There is another route that I can take. Don't despair, really. There is an alternative option out there. And a very good alternative option. Like, as I said earlier on, I'd never look back from getting this done. I'm delighted with the results, really. And I think my friends, my family that know about the surgery that I have had, they've noted it with me that I'm much more confident, that I'm much more kind of happier, more outgoing, especially in a more social environment with people that I may or may not know.
Well, let's talk to your consultant now. Your surgeon, Dr. Peter Prendergast. I feel like I'm in an episode of Embarrassing Bodies, and I don't mean that in any bad way. So, Peter, thank you very much indeed for talking to us today. So this was never going to kill John, all right, this condition, was it? Was it life-threatening, or was this purely a cosmetic situation?
You're right, it's absolutely. It was never going to kill John, but it is a problem that affects men significantly. It has a significant social impact, psychological impact. And as you can hear, you know, John describing very eloquently his problems, his issues, and even, I suppose, turmoil at stages over the last decade. So it's not a condition that is going to kill you, but it is something that a lot of men, it impairs their quality of life. I think that's the most important thing here, quality of life.
Yeah, and have we any idea what kind of numbers in Ireland?
Well, male breast enlargement is something, surprisingly, that affects about...
Is that what it's actually called? Breast enlargement? That sounds like a procedure rather than a condition.
Yeah, no, well, enlarged male breasts would be the, I suppose, a spectrum of conditions, because the medical term used for abnormally enlarged breast tissue is gynecomastia. Now, gynecomastia is enlarged glandular tissue in men. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's fat, excessive fat, which is we call pseudogynecomastia. And then there's a mixture of both glandular tissue and fat, which is a mixed picture, a mixed gynecomastia.
Okay.
So it affects actually up to one in three men. So it's a huge issue.
But when they're younger, or usually, because I think I've a little bit of it now myself, but then I'm 47 and I don't do anything. I'm pure lazy.
Yeah, now, you know, you may have a little bit of excessive fatty tissue. There may be glandular tissue. In pubertal males, 60% of males during puberty will have enlarged glandular tissue. So this is a physiological gynecomastia.
Okay.
It's something that usually then resolves over weeks and months or even a couple of years. And then it can come back in later life when men are elderly. And it's essentially a hormone imbalance where there's excessive female hormones, estrogens, or a reduction in testosterone. This is gynecomastia. This is the glandular tissue.
And John said he had a problem with his thyroid, so this would lend to that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. It could be, for John, a mixed picture of some excessive stubborn fat that he just can't shift despite exercise, and then some fibrous actual glandular tissue as well. And it does occur in conditions like underactive, overactive thyroid, or liver disease, or alcohol intake, medications. There's a spectrum, there's a lot of conditions that can actually cause gynecomastia.
And would you always say to somebody who presents themselves, yeah, get it done, this is what we do, or live with it? I mean, what would you be advising patients? I mean, you're in the cosmetic business here, but what would you be advising people?
Well, I mean, the most important thing, particularly in the cosmetic business, is not to just uniformly treat patients based on what they want to do. The first thing is to listen. And I mean, if you listen to John's story, you can really get a sense of how it's affecting him. The next step would be, you know, obviously a thorough assessment to see what the issue is, and then explaining the options. You know, and there are a number of options. One of the options, of course, is to do nothing and to keep on going as you are. With gynecomastia and enlarged male breasts in particular, I suppose the traditional technique would be to do a surgical excision, so that that's more invasive surgery, making a visible scar and incision and surgically resecting the tissue. And that would be one other option, which is still performed actually even today. Traditional liposuction is another possible option, if particularly there's a lot of excessive fatty tissue and not glandular tissue. Now, if there's a mixed picture where there's glandular tissue and fat, then traditional liposuction has certain limitations. It's not very effective at removing glandular tissue, which is why we can use VASER, which is ultrasound-assisted liposuction.
Yes, now John has mentioned that. Presumably that's what you did here, you used VASER. You might explain that to me in just a moment, but I'm looking at four pictures on your little laptop here. Are these pictures of John?
No, these are not John.
These aren't John, okay.
Because we're not going to show his pictures here right now, but these are pictures of one of my patients.
Okay, and well, you might explain to me. You might talk. We're on the radio, so you might have to talk me through it.
Sure, well, you can see the before pictures, and this is a characteristic, typical picture of a man who has enlarged male breasts. A slight, you know, feminization of the male chest. They look like almost female breasts here, with the shape of the breasts. Now, obviously, it depends on whether there's glandular tissue or fat tissue. This is the after picture, and you can see a significant flattening here of the chest. You'll notice, if you look very closely, a small mark here. This is 1 week after the procedure. So there's almost no bruising here. The procedure itself involves three steps. So the first step is that we infiltrate local anesthetic. And that form of local anesthesia is called tumescent anesthesia. It has a very, very high safety profile, and it's used extensively in traditional liposuction as well. So we infiltrate diluted local anesthetic into the breast tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were doing traditional liposuction, we would use a suction cannula at that stage and just suck tissue out. The problem, as I said, with that is it's not very efficient at breaking down male breast tissue because it's so fibrous and dense and difficult to remove with traditional liposuction. So instead, we use the VASER probes. That's the second step.
Now, describe what the VASER probes are, if you would.
A VASER probe is a very thin 2.9 or 3.7 millimeter diameter titanium probe, which is designed to emit ultrasound waves. So it essentially vibrates at ultrasonic frequencies, about 36,000 times a second. And this creates a phenomenon called cavitation. So it emulsifies or liquefies tissue very efficiently. It's quite selective for fat and glandular tissue, so we don't interfere with too much the blood vessels and the nerves. So that translates for the patient to an easier recovery, less bruising, and importantly for this area as well, better skin tightening. Because the ultrasound, when we pass it under the skin, it stimulates the skin to retract in the postoperative period. So the skin tightening effect is better. And so the chance of laxity of skin afterwards is less. So after the tissue is emulsified or liquefied, then we aspirate the fat in the usual way with a suction cannula. Mm-hmm. Of course, we don't have to be so aggressive because the tissue is already melted, if you like.
Yeah, so it comes out easily. Oh, a little bit like frog spawn, I'm thinking, actually.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Or a smoothie or something. Yeah. So it's very easy to remove this tissue, and then a compression garment is applied. That's it. Those are the three steps. Infiltration, vaser, ultrasonic energy delivery, and then aspiration of the tissue.
Okay, and is that all you did to John?
That's all we did. That's all we did. So there's no excision of tissue. There's no excisional surgery, cutting away tissue. The incisions are about 3 to 4 millimeters. Usually we make two very small incisions on either side. And the patient is awake during the entire procedure.
You've used the local anesthetic, so there should be no pain there.
There's a little bit of discomfort in the initial infiltration phase. Yeah. The procedure itself is totally painless. The melting of the tissue, the aspiration, the suction is totally painless. And you have the added advantage of about 4 to 8 hours of additional total pain relief because of the tumescent anesthesia, which lasts a significant period of time.
Okay, and then how long is it before we're back to relative normality?
About 2 weeks, you can start going back to the gym. I mean, it's going back to work in about 2 days. It's a very quick recovery. It's not very traumatic. A compression garment, which is designed to fit each patient perfectly, is important for skin retraction, to reduce some swelling, and to provide comfort as well. So that compression garment is worn under the clothes for 4 weeks.
And how many people have you done?
It's in the order of hundreds at this stage.
In Dundrum?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, we've been here for, I was the first to use this technology in Ireland about 6 years ago. And we're finding now, actually, the men are coming in more. I mean, it's more of a, I suppose as awareness increases, we have more male patients coming in for not just male chest, but abdomen and flanks and other areas as well, the neck.
And are you doing all of that then here, are you?
Yes, we can do practically any part of the body. Thighs, for women in particular, thighs, abdomen, flanks, and the neck and the jowls and everything. So it's the same concept for each procedure. It's just extremely well suited for male breast tissue in particular because it's so fibrous.
Now, I'm going to assume automatically that you can't get this on your medical insurance. So BUPA or Aviva or VHI aren't going to cover this. So this is purely cosmetic. It's not life-threatening in any way. It's not dangerous to your health necessarily, unless you're really, really overweight, in which case it puts all sorts of pressure, I presume, on your organs and stuff. So how much does it cost for the procedure John has had, and what do you call it?
This is called vaser lipoplasty. I mean, the I suppose generic name is ultrasound-assisted lipoplasty. Vaser is a third-generation ultrasound device, so it's kind of the latest technology. Mm-hmm. There were previous devices before that. So vaser lipo for the male chest. It costs almost 4,000 euros. It's a single procedure, and it's a long-lasting result.
Long-lasting, like forever? Is it going to come back and bother him again?
No. As an adult, we have a finite number of fat cells. So once we remove those fat cells, they don't come back. They're gone forever. That doesn't mean that the remaining fat cells can't enlarge if you take in a lot of calories and if you don't burn them. So, of course, as John a good example of the lifestyle that you should lead in combination with a procedure like this: exercise, healthy eating, and there's a lot of health promotion in this too. It's not just purely a cosmetic treatment and then we say goodbye. So yes, the results are long lasting, and of course you will continue to age normally, but the fat and the enlarged tissue won't come back.
Would you perform it on a juvenile?
No, I wouldn't. No, I don't perform procedures, aesthetic, cosmetic procedures for.
Even if the parents came in here and said, "Listen, he just can't deal with all the bullying, all the teasing in school as John was getting. Please help him."
No, I wouldn't. Often in those cases, there is an underlying endocrine condition that needs to be addressed. And as always, we should treat the underlying cause first. So those patients would be referred to an endocrinologist rather than me just performing a cosmetic treatment on them.
So what's the youngest age you'd actually perform a treatment on?
Well, it depends. Certainly late 20s. It is important if how long the issue has been there for, because once male glandular tissue is established and has been there for longer than a year, it's even when you remove the underlying cause, say medications that are causing it, hormonal imbalance, the actual breast tissue won't regress. So it's a long-lasting problem that needs to be addressed using something like this.
So, John, would you do it again, I suppose, is my final question to you.
Well, I don't need to get it done again, which is the important thing. But I would certainly, if you take this back to October, November last year, when I got it done, and ask me if this was the results, I'd definitely do it again.
So there you are. And thanks again to John, not his real name, for being so honest and upfront, because it was a very, very delicate situation he found himself in. Could you imagine being teased in school? And as he said, played rugby, so he was in the showers with the guys afterwards and they were teasing him because he had these moobs, man boobs, if you like. And thanks also to Dr. Peter Prendergast for allowing us into his clinic this morning. Frank has been on to say, that fat removal procedure sounds fantastic. I have hidden my man boob chest for years on the beach with friends. At last, something I could do. This is a godsend, says Frank in County Meath. Well, as I said, it's cosmetic. It's going to cost you a few quid. But as Brenda was saying to me, listening to it, £4,000, if it's going to be the rest of your life, if it's going to work for you, mm-hmm. if it works for you.
If it means you can form proper relationships, if your self-esteem is better, if you're more comfortable around other people and jobs and the gym, etc., etc. It could, what is it, two or three holidays, is it takeaways for a year? Whatever way, is it cigarettes gone or whatever you want to analyse it, it could be the best £4,000to spend your life.
Can I just say, nothing to do with Dr. Prendergast and his clinic. We're not endorsing it. We're just bringing it to you. Mm. To let you know what's out there. There are other clinics, I'm sure, around the country offering similar treatments, similar procedures. So, you know, you make your choice and you pay your money sort of thing. Anyway, we'll be back after this break.